Namaskar.
Bienvenue.
I'm from Bangalore, India.
Dublin, Ireland.
Turkey.
The Philippines.
This is Feet into Words.
I came here to study.
To work. To volunteer.
Build a life of my own.
Welcome to Feet into Words.
Esto es Con los pies en dos mundos.
Bir ayağım burada, bir ayağım orada yaşıyorum.
Welcome to Feet into Worlds.
There was a time when the foods New Yorkers considered exotic included chop suey and Italian cooking. A new project aims to capture that simpler era in a series of audio interviews with older city residents. I'm John Rudolph, executive producer of Feet in Two Worlds, a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School. On this Food in Two Worlds podcast, the forgotten foods of New York City.
Almost all the vegetables we could not find here. We can only find cabbage, tomato, carrots, something like that. We have many Chinese vegetables like bok choy, Chinese spinach. We could not find here.
That's Christina Lam, who came to New York from Hong Kong in the late 1960s, talking about how hard it once was to find Chinese vegetables, even in Manhattan's Chinatown. Lam is one of several longtime New York residents interviewed by journalist Ann Noy Sani for the Forgotten Foods of New York City project, and also created the website City Spoonful. Ann, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Ann, food in New York City has certainly changed a lot over the years. How have immigrants helped those changes in the city's food landscape?
I think they not only created a demand for different kinds of food when they came here, but they also brought the expertise to create those foods, whether you're talking about a dumpling factory or a tortilla factory, or even farms in New Jersey that are growing bok choy instead of, you know, Boston leaf lettuce or something like that.
So remind us what New York was like food-wise, say, in the 60s when Christina Lam arrived here from Hong Kong.
Right, yeah. So I interviewed a lot of longtime New Yorkers. You know, some were immigrants, some were not. And it seems like the dining landscape really changed. Like you said, you know, Italian food was considered to be exotic. Chinese food was basically chop suey. There was just not as much diversity and variety. Also, in terms of ethnic grocery stores, basically you might see an Italian bodega, you might see a Jewish appetizing shop, and that was about it. You know, nothing like what you see when you go to Queens or the Bronx or even Brooklyn now.
So what were kind of the staple foods or the interesting foods of New York in those earlier eras?
Well, I think people ate a lot of sandwiches, a lot of soup. It was very sort of European-influenced, sort of the stuff you might see on Mad Men.
Yeah, that's a good barometer, isn't it?
Exactly. And I think, you know, gradually over time, people developed a taste for these other foods as people came in from South America and from Asia and, you know, from other parts of Eastern Europe, Russia.
Why do you think food is such a good way to tell the story of what New York was like in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, even the 40s?
I'm hoping that it's something universal that everybody can relate to. We all eat. We all have strong associations with food, strong food memories. And so it really helps you sort of zero in on how things have changed. I mean, you walk down Roosevelt Avenue in Jackson Heights, Queens at, you know, 10 o'clock on a summer night, and you're going to see Ecuadorian food trucks. You're going to see Colombian food trucks. You're going to see taco vendors. You know, back in the day, Jackson Heights was very German. And things changed so fast and so dramatically in the city.
And so you went around and you found older New Yorkers to get them to share their food memories. And tell us about some of those people that you talked to.
Right, yes. Yeah. So I worked with a nonprofit in Brooklyn called Elders Share the Arts, and they helped me. They reached out to several senior centers and helped me find basically anybody over the age of 55 who enjoyed talking about food, had strong memories of food, or enjoyed cooking. And so I was trying to get a good mix of people, both native New Yorkers, but also, you know, since immigration is such a part of the culture in New York City, people who had come here from other places as well.
Now, one of the people you spoke to is Olga Colon, who came to New York from Puerto Rico.
That's right. Like many of the immigrants that I interviewed, Olga Colon had incredibly vivid memories of the food she grew up eating in Puerto Rico, most of which she couldn't really find or reproduce here in New York.
Oh,
My God, in Puerto Rico, where I used to live, food was very tasty. Especially this was like rice pudding, pasteles, pigs, you know, the whole pig, roasted pig. Food was very beautiful, and they, you know, whatever they put in the food, they have it in the farm, so they could put it inside, you know.
An excerpt from an interview with Olga Colon, a longtime New Yorker, about her food memories. A lot of the people you spoke to talked about their food memories from the country that they immigrated from, but then did they make a connection between that and the foods that they ate when they came to New York?
Well, yeah, it was interesting. A lot of them wanted to talk about the foods that they missed from home that they weren't able to find here, they weren't able to accurately reproduce here. But it also gives you sort of a sense of the experience of immigration because they described what it was like to come here and encounter American food for the first time, and you know what American food looks like to people coming in from the outside from maybe very different cooking and food traditions. For example, Christina Lamb, who you heard earlier, was frightened by the size of the chickens that she encountered in New York City. It was very different from what she had in Hong Kong.
In Hong Kong, our chicken is much tinier, and we cut up to small pieces. But here, they cut big pieces. So when I see it, I don't want to eat it. I told my mother-in-law to put it away. I'm afraid.
A frightening, large American chicken.
Exactly. And that doesn't even mention turkey. Several people told me how frightening they found turkey to be in the U.S.
So much of food journalism today is about helping people make dishes to reproduce dishes that are found in either in immigrant communities or in exotic places around the world. But this is not really what your focus is here. You're talking about food traditions and memories that really aren't accessible to the average listener because they're not going to reproduce what some, let's say, a Puerto Rican immigrant would have eaten in their kitchen in the 1960s.
That's a good point. So, maybe for some people then that sort of takes away the interest, those people who are looking for recipes or restaurant recommendations. But I hope this captures something that, you know, otherwise might be lost as these people are no longer around telling their stories, trying to get these voices out there that we don't usually hear, voices of older people, elderly people, voices of immigrants who often aren't in the mainstream media, and, a really authentic take on their food and how that sort of interplays with the experience of immigration, you know, from the perspective of the immigrant, not from an American perspective.
And it also gives a sense of, again, how New York has changed over the years.
Yeah, that's very true. For people who are coming into the city, you know, in the last 10 years, I mean, the city has changed a lot, not to mention, you know, what it was like in the 1930s when, you know, there were ice men for your ice box and there were horse-drawn fruit and vegetable carts going through the city. The immigrant community was very different demographic than it is now. So it's hard to imagine if you haven't lived here, maybe even if you have been here for a long time. It's just hard to sort of keep track of all these changes.
It's hard to remember what life was like back then in the day.
I can only imagine. I'm a transplant myself, so it was really interesting to learn about the city.
And you spoke again to Olga Colon. She talked about life on the Lower East Side.
Oh, right. Yeah, definitely. Now when you think of the Lower East Side, you know, it's a good place to party, if you're under the age of 25, maybe. And when she was there, it was a great place to buy Puerto Rican groceries eventually. And when she first arrived in the late 1940s, there was nothing there. But by the time she was raising her family in the 50s and 60s, it was a very Puerto Rican neighborhood. Now it's, you know, mostly bars and most of those grocery stores are gone.
Let's listen to Olga Colon again.
I always lived in the Lower East Side since 1944, the time that I came to this country. You cannot find no bananas, no platan, no plantains, no nothing. But then they start in Orchard Street. They bring a place, you know, Spanish people bring a place and they have buy everything. Orchard Street, everything is bars now. Maybe one place is still there.
And I know you've had a lot of interesting experiences doing these interviews. Have you also had a chance to eat any of the foods that people talk about?
Well, not nearly enough of the foods that they talk about, but one interview in particular, I was interviewing a woman in Washington Heights, Nerese Ortiz, and she actually stopped the interview. We were talking about tostones, which is a green plantain that's fried and then mashed and then fried again. And she said, "You've never had homemade tostones?" And she jumped up and she went to her kitchen and she peeled a plantain and, you know, turned the stove on, propped it in the oil. And we, you know, we stopped and we ate tostones. And then we kept going after that with the interview, which was awesome, I have to say, fresh from the fryer. Mm.
Sounds delicious. Let's listen to a little bit of Nerese Ortiz.
I love to cook. Rice and bean, green plantain, pork. This is the culture from DR. And here in New York, especially in Washington Heights, you can get whatever you want.
We should say that not all of the interviews you've done for Forgotten Foods of New York City are with immigrants, but many of them are. So there's a broader mission here, isn't there?
It almost became sort of a two-pronged mission. Initially, I was more interested in native New Yorkers talking about, you know, Onedic's hot dogs disappeared and, the fall of the automat, soda fountains, things like that. And then I realize that there's this whole population of New Yorkers who, you know, they've been here. They're part of the city. Their food cultures may not be totally American, but it's very much part of the city. And their memories of food are just as interesting, though very different. Mostly food from home and mostly, you know, home cooking traditions.
Anne, thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
Anne Noyes Sani's project is called Forgotten Foods of NYC. She runs the website City Spoonful. The Feet in Two Worlds podcast is produced by Aaron Leaf and Jocelyn Gonzalez. Our engineer is Chad Bernhardt at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism. I'm John Rudolph. Thanks for listening.
Feet in Two Worlds is supported by the David and Catherine Moore Family Foundation, the Ralph E. Ogden Foundation, and listeners and readers like you. Join our growing group of supporters. Go to our website, fi2w.org, and click on the Support tab in the upper right-hand corner. This program was produced in association with the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism and CUNY TV. Feet in Two Worlds, supporting immigrant journalists and bringing their stories to the rest of America. We're a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School.